Welcome to Four Chicks Chatting, a womanish podcast that will engage, excite, and empower you as we chat about business and personal development, all with a healthy dose of humor. And now it's time to check in with our chicks, Kathy, Kristen, Mary Fran, and Robin.
We are live. Oh my gosh. Welcome back, everybody. This is Kathy, and we are Four Chicks Chatting, and we have a guest today. I could speak for all of us. We've never been so excited. His name is Bob Berg, and I've got some great words to say about Bob, and hopefully the music won't play me off the stage. Because this man is so fantastic. I have a lot of wonderful things to say, but Bob is an author and a speaker. Bob has been recognized by the American Management Association as one of the 30 most influential leaders. How about that? That is fantastic. And Bob and David Mann, in their best-selling business parable, The Go-Giver, and their follow-up, The Go-Giver Leader, Bob and David challenged the conventional wisdom about success. Now they're back with a new and equally compelling story about the power of, and I love this term, Bob, genuine influence, not only in business, but beyond. The Go-Giver Influencer, a little story about a most persuasive idea, tackles the paradox of achieving what you want by focusing on the other person's interests. What salesperson does that ever? Not in a way that is self-sacrificial, but rather in such a way that all parties benefit greatly. The result is immediate and long-term success. Bob Berg speaks all over the world on topics related to the Go-Giver, as well as what he calls genuine influence. While his total book sales number well over 1 million copies, his and Mann's original book itself sold over 850,000 copies and has spurred an international movement. The new Go-Giver Influencer might be just the most important book of all. Wow, Bob, welcome. We are honored to have you today.
The honor is absolutely mine. Great to be with all of you.
Yeah, we are. We were so stoked when you said hello. I mean, we've been quoting you and looking through your stuff for so long. And I mean, I'm in the nonprofit world, not even just, you know, the sales and entrepreneurs that the other chicks are. And your work has impacted me and so many missions.
Wow. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, you're really taking a situation and running with it and helping a lot of people. And I got to read some of your upcoming book, and wow, it's just so, so very touching. And I wish you the best with that. I know it's going to affect the lives of a lot of people.
Oh, I appreciate that. But I'll tell you what, Bob, my influence, you know, as we're talking influencer, really, it stemmed from, because I went from nobody talked about this rare disease to now people talk about it a lot. It's, and I tell it all the time, it's being a giver. It's all of the stuff that you talk about. It's giving, giving, giving to the field, to the folks that I work for. And it has come back by leaps and bounds. I mean, everything that you've outlined has come to pass. It's been wonderful.
Thank you.
It's such a refreshing philosophy given the times that we live in, when mm-hmm. you know, when rudeness and just shouting the other person down seems to be the way of the world. And unfortunately, people who are, I'll say successful, although I'll put that term in air quotes, because you know, the success of someone who behaves like that is questionable at best, but the concept of being a giver and really being interested in what the benefit is, how you can help another person, is, as I said, it's so unique and so refreshing. How did that become your philosophy?
Well, I think I was very fortunate to grow up as the product of parents who, that's how they live their lives. So, you know, I always got to see that and got to experience it. They always brought value really to everyone whose lives they touched. So, you know, that was a good start. Of course, as you grow up and go into the world and you see other people doing things different ways, and sometimes you think it's working out for them despite them not necessarily doing what's right. And you see other people who do things the right way and succeed, and others who don't. And you kind of can get mixed up, and you start listening to some of the messages of the world around you, which I think I did. But fortunately, I got to see for myself that really, if you want to do well in life, if you want to do well in business, you're much better off having people on your side. You're much better off focusing on bringing value to others. And, the thing is, those are not opposite concepts. You succeed in business because you have people on your side. You succeed in business because you focus on bringing value to others. And, in it's interesting because we talk about in the Go-Giver, the five laws, and people say, well, so what if, what if you're not a nice person, but you're succeeding? And I'll tell you, in a free market based economy, and free market simply meaning no one's forced to do business with you. In a free market based economy, even if a person's not a nice person, they've got to be following those laws. They've got to be bringing more value to that other person than what they're receiving in payment. Otherwise, no one would buy from them. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They've got to be able to touch a lot of people's lives. They've got to put the other person's interests first, not even because they want to, but because they have to if they're going to get customers. Right. Remember, no one buys from you because you have a quota to meet. They don't, right? They don't buy from you because you need the money, and they don't buy from you even though because you're a really nice person. They buy from you because they believe, and when I say buy, it could be a product or service, could be an idea, could be whatever it is. They buy from you because they believe they'll be better off by doing so than by not doing so. And so someone who understands this, they know their focus has got to be on others. Now, we also, we want people to actually want to be that way, right?
Be nice.
And the fact is, it feels good when you can focus on others and you can focus on bringing value to the marketplace, and you see the rewards that take place. Typically, those people who do things in a way that's very self-centered and I-focused, people we call go-takers, okay? Mm-hmm. When they succeed financially, it's not because they do those things. It's in spite of doing those things. When they're nasty or they're mean or they're this or they're focused on themselves, and you say, oh, well, they're succeeding. It's not because of that. It's despite that. There's something else that maybe they had a particular product or service which was in demand, and they just, or for whatever reason it was, they're able to just work so hard and so long at something and that they're able to sustain it. But it's a horrible way to try to live life. And it typically leads to burnout and frustration and so forth. It's just so much easier to succeed when you've, developed an army of personal walking ambassadors because your focus has been on bringing value to them.
Mary Fran.
No, I love that term, personal walking, an army of walking ambassadors. That's phenomenal. I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I was just going to say, Bob, I love this concept of the giver, and I have found over the course of my life and my business that it's very, very true. But I think that being a giver is really the ultimate way of becoming an influencer, because I think the more we give, the more we can influence behaviors for people to maybe mimic our behaviors and also become givers, but then also to, when we give part of ourselves, people will then obviously get to know, like, and trust us, and then see that we can provide that value that will then benefit them long term.
Well, that's a huge part of being an influencer, because if you look at the term influence, it can be defined in a certain way, but that's only part of what it really is. So, on a very, very basic level, we can define influence as simply the ability to move a person or persons to a desired action, usually within the context of a specific goal. That's influence by definition, but that's not it's not the essence of influence. The essence of influence is pull as opposed to push. as in the saying, how far can you push a rope? And the answer is not very, at least not very fast or very effectively, which is why great influencers, why genuine influencers don't push. You never hear people say things like, wow, that Dave or that Susan, she is so influential. She has a lot of push with people, right? You know, she sure is pushy. We just love to, you know, they'd say she's very influential. She has a lot of pull with people. And, you know, that's really what it is. This pull is an attraction, okay? Great people and great people attract people to themselves first. Great influencers attract people to themselves first and only then to their ideas. So the question is, how do you pull, right? How do you pull? And for this, I think we need to go to the classic book, How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, right? And what he said, and the whole book was wonderful, of course, but there was one thing he said that I believe was the underlying premise of his entire book and his entire message. And it was this. He said, ultimately, people do things for their reasons, not our reasons. So the great influencer understands on a head level and on a heart level that we always have to ask ourselves self-question in order to make sure that our focus is in the correct place. For example, a genuine influencer would ask themselves, how does what I'm asking this person to do, how does it align with their goals? With their wants, with their needs, with their desires? How does what I'm asking this other person to do, how does it align with their values? What problems for them am I helping to solve? What advantages? How am I making life better for them through their doing this? And when asking ourselves these questions intelligently, when asking ourselves these questions genuinely, authentically, not as a way to manipulate another human being into doing our will, but as a way of building everyone in the process, now we've come a lot closer to earning that person's commitment to our ideas, as opposed to depending on some type of compliance. And I remember one of my great mentors, her name is Dondi Scumaci. She's a speaker and author on leadership and team building. She's just wonderful. And she says, when it comes to leadership, when it comes to influence, compliance, she says, will never take you where commitment can go.
Somebody tweet that out immediately.
And it's at Dondi Scumaci. Dondi Scumaci.
We look for that, everyone. Bob, you said so much there. For me personally, in having my sales career, a couple of things that you said stood out. I grew up first as a sales support or more in a service role. And so I had a quota, but I don't think that I kept making the quota or exceeding the quota sometimes based on actually selling as much as I was servicing them. So I think providing that level of service, i.e. providing that value to them, made them pick up the phone and call me again.
You mean the service you were providing after
exactly.
They were already...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the value. It was not that I was hitting them hard every single time with selling, but I understood what, and you said, what's in it for them? What's their personal win? And I think I mentioned this before, guys, in another podcast, but if I'm dealing with a customer and maybe they need something that I have right now or at a later time, what is, maybe they needed a personal win right at that moment. Maybe they are having a situation or they had a situation or maybe their last idea bombed and they really need to redeem themselves. And so doing something with me, that was going to be a personal win for them. Or maybe they're vying for a promotion and they feel like this is something that they can, something that I can help them to expand their idea and take it up to management. But again, asking myself, what is in it for them?
Exactly.
Making their priority part of the sale, not my priority of making the sale.
Oh, it's perfect. You know, it's sort of like what Sam, one of the mentors in the original story, The Go-Giver, said to Joe. It's making your win all about the other person's win.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you do that, and again, there's nothing, when we say, you know, place their interests first, make it about them, we're not talking about being a doormat. We're not talking about being a martyr. We're not talking about being self-sacrificial in any way. It's simply knowing that, and as you've heard me say before, all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. And mm-hmm. there's no faster, more powerful, or more effective way to elicit those feelings toward you from others than by genuinely and authentically moving, as we say, from an I focus or a me focus mm-hmm. to an other focus, looking to, you know, to help them hit the home run, so to speak.
It becomes about relationship building from the start.
Really,
if you approach it from that perspective, then everybody, then the boat rises with everyone in it.
Exactly.
Right? Absolutely. Isn't that something that you said? Something to that effect, yeah. I remember. Yeah, yeah. The boat rises with everyone in it.
A rising tide raises all boats.
There you go. I love that. You know, I was looking as a fellow writer, I was looking at there's something that you talk about with keywords, 8 keywords that you say, practically always move a person to your side of an issue. Please tell me what they are.
I'm ready to write them down.
This is a game changer. And let me explain the context of it. This is when you're asking someone to do something for you that they don't have to do. Okay. Maybe even that they should, but they don't have to. It might be someone in the other cubicle or in another part of the company. It might be that customer service person who doesn't have to do this extra thing for you, but it would be great if they did. It might be that airline person at the gate who can do this but doesn't have to. So in other words, this is kind of the context we're setting up, but it works in many more places than that. Okay, but you've approached this person and in that you've been very polite, you've been patient, you've been courteously persistent, you've utilized the principles that we talk about in the Go-Giver Influencer, all that's fine. At the very end, and what you've done at this point is you've moved that person to where, you know, if they could, they'd probably like to help you, but, you know, again, they're not so motivated to do so that they're going to without a little bit of help on your part. So the 8 key words are: if you can't do it, I'll definitely understand. And let me explain.
Oh, I love that. Okay?
So if you can't do it, I'll definitely understand. What you're doing here is a few things. One is you're saying, you know, I do believe you can. I have confidence in you that you can. But if for whatever reason you truly can't, it's okay. You're more important as a person than me getting the results I want, okay? So you're giving this person what I call the out or the back door. Most people, well, human nature, we don't want to feel cornered. We don't want to feel pressured. We don't want to feel like we have to do something. We're much more likely to do something for someone when they give us sort of an out or a back door. What I call Berg's law of the out or back door is that the bigger the out or back door you give someone to take, the less they'll feel the need to take it. Okay. Huh. So when you say, if you can't do it, I'll definitely understand, you're just kindly and gracefully letting them know, yeah, you know, you think they can, you hope they can, but you're more important than this. Now, those 8 keywords will be enough, but if you feel the need to, you can pause a few seconds and then follow that up with, if you could, I'd certainly appreciate it.
Okay. See, that makes me want to do it more.
It does. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you can't do it, I'll definitely understand.
I feel like there's almost a piece of that too, that, I mean, to me, if someone said that to me, that would almost be like a challenge. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, sure. I can do it. I can do it for you.
I can do it faster. I can do it by Friday.
I feel like there's an element that would cause that reaction, like to make someone actually want to deliver for you.
Yeah, but it needs to be set up properly so that this person doesn't feel threatened by you. You've let this person know you're by the way you've handled yourself, that you're a good person. It's not a conflict. It's just right. And then once you've gotten to that point, And we do that through, you know, when we talk about the laws of genuine influence, you know, being able to control your emotions, putting yourself in their shoes, setting the proper frame, and communicating with tact and empathy, and letting go of having to be right. You combine those things and you use those 8 words, and I'm telling you, there, it's a game changer.
It is a game changer. And it's so refreshing that you, the style is that way, as opposed to so many people now are saying something opposite, that it's kind of more in your face and don't take no for an answer and tell them everything that you're going to provide. And that makes me not like and trust people. And I think that's why you stand out. I mean, you stand out in my Twitter feed and now my Instagram. Your message is just so much more. It's a kind way that a lot of people say you can't be kind and giving and be successful. And that's why I love your theory and your proof to it, that the more you give, the more influence you have, and it comes back in your bank account and all of that later. I think it's absolutely true. And that's why I think the 4 chicks all hit it off so well when we all got together, because we're of the same principle. Right. And people look at us and say, how have you succeeded so much so fast? Mm-hmm. And we do things in a trusting, as we always say, our thing, the bottom line is trust. And we've all given to each other's careers and and families and all the, you know, we became friends.
Well, and it comes across. That comes through, you know, when you all do things online and when you do things on your blog, your podcast and everything. So yeah, I mean, it's obvious that you all embody, you know, those very values.
So let me ask you this now. Let's get into this a little deeper. How do you stay so giving and kind and delivering such a great message when there's got to be people that come at you with wanting a million things or drive you crazy or negative? How do you handle all of that and stay true to who Bob Berg is?
Well, first, thank you for saying things like, how do you stay so kind and giving? And hey, I certainly have my moments where I don't feel, you know, excuse me, very pleased at certain things people do and so forth. But you do realize, well, first of all, so let me, and I alluded to this earlier, but it's very important, I think, that we always keep in mind that being a go-giver does not mean allowing yourself to be taken advantage of or putting yourself in a position to feel guilted into doing things that you either don't want to do or don't feel you should do, or that it's not congruent with your values in any way. Mm-hmm. So I'm very, very good at saying no. Okay. But one of the things I teach how to do is to, when you do have to say no to someone, to say it in a way and do it in a way that's very respectful, very kind, that honors them. So it's not an insult and it's not personal, but to do it in a way that's authentic and congruent with your values. So, you know, you have to say no a lot, you know, and the more successful that you get, I think, and or what have you, the more people want things from you and the more people ask and the more, you know, so you've got to pick your spots. You know, yeah. It just comes down to that, but it's saying no in a way that's kind, but still being able to say no.
I like that. And I like that you do talk about that you don't say yes to everything, because you can't. And I think people mistake kindness and giving for that you say yes all the time and you just can't.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I often say to people too, and as it was brought up earlier, well, you can't be nice and be successful. Or, you know, people say, oh, they're too nice. Well, what do you mean by too nice? And they'll say, well, they're too nice. They get taken advantage of. And I'll just make this point, if I may, that if you are a very, very nice person and you find yourself consistently getting taken advantage of, not throughout our lives, we're all going to be taken advantage of one time or another. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying if you're a very, very nice person and you find yourself in a pattern of being taken advantage of, it's not because you're nice or too nice. It's because you're doing things in a certain way that allows yourself to be taken advantage of. There's absolutely no cause and effect or natural congruence between being a nice or giving person and being taken advantage of. There just isn't.
So I think it from what you're saying, it's another word I think that's obviously important to you is respect, and it's respect for others, but it's respect for yourself too, and respect for your you know, your own value system and who you are and what you stand for. And I think if you reflect that back to another person, that you respect those same things about them, then maybe that prevents you from being taken advantage of. There does have to be a measure of self-respect.
Absolutely. Great point.
It seems to me also that all the members of your team have the same values that you have. I would have to assume that it's a group, you know, it's a group effort there, being on the same value system.
Yeah. You know, I just think of them. My business partner, Kathy Tajanel, first, who is first of all, she's just brilliant. She's a brilliant human being and as kind as she is brilliant. And we've got people like Shannon Farabee and Leslie Parisi, who work closely with us and doing so much of the support work that makes it possible for us to do what we need to do. And then there are the people we contract out to do the certain elements of what we do. And again, they're all people who absolutely bring those same values to the table. So it's really a joy to have that kind of team.
You can tell. I mean, Robin works so much with branding, and I'm sure that she can speak to that, because you can tell through everything you do, from your social media to your podcast to your interviews and in the communication setting this one up. It was all very a very similar theme of respect and kindness.
Thank you.
And what I love about you, Bob, is that you're approachable and you respond to people. What I've found is a lot of these, key influencers that you see out there on social media and everything, it's, you know, you can like their things, you can comment, you can ask them questions, and then mum's the word. You don't hear anything back. And I appreciate so much how you are an influencer. You're an influencer on so many levels, but you don't shun people who haven't reached that level of expertise yet or that level of success yet. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That means a lot to me for you to say that. Thank you.
Oh, it comes through. I have a question, Bob, and this is big for me because I love everybody's, how their brains work, right? What makes you tick? That's what gets me going. And you said that there is one motivating factor shared by every single person on earth.
Yeah.
What is it? We all want to know.
Yeah. So I learned this first from someone who I consider a great mentor, the late Harry Brown, who was just a magnificent human being. And he was a writer on everything from economics to philosophy to politics to sales, just a wonderful person. And he talked about, he wrote a manuscript back in the 1960s, actually two manuscripts for a book he never published. His wife, Pamela, found the two hard drives after he passed away. And fortunately, she told somebody about it who was in the direct response business. He got picked it up, published it, sold it to someone else. And I got to read the book. And the book is The Secret to Selling Anything. And but what the two in the two manuscripts were put into one book, but they were two brief manuscripts, because even the book is brief. But the one manuscript was on understanding human nature. The other manuscript was about taking that understanding of human nature and bringing it to sales. And by the way, the secret that Harry talks about, which he says should never be a secret, the secret to selling anything, is to find out what the other person wants and help them get it. That's the big secret. So Harry had some rules, and I did a blog post on this on the Berg.com blog site. If you go there and then just put in the search engine, The Secret of Selling, and then click on it, it will come up to the article I did on it. And what he said was this: when it comes to human nature, and this is sort of a three-part type of thing. First, he said, everyone seeks happiness. Now, he's quick to say, because like I am, Harry was very much a respecter of individuals, okay, an individualist. And what he said, and I've often said this, that in no other way would he ever say anyone or everyone, because typically that's not the case. It's not everyone. It's not anyone. Mm-hmm. But as a very important part of human nature, everyone seeks happiness. Now, to understand this, though, we have to define happiness,
yeah,
right? We always have to check our premises. You know, what happiness means different things to different people. But in this case, he's using the dictionary definition, the mental feeling of well-being, okay? So everyone, whether consciously or unconsciously, seeks happiness. That's number one, but there's two other points. Number two is that happiness is relative, okay? We all understand, as individuals, we all understand happiness differently. So we place different values on different things. In other words, what would make one person very happy would be absolutely meaningless to another person, or might even cause someone else to be unhappy. Now, too often, especially in sales, we assume that what would make us happy is what would make the prospect happy.
Right.
Oh, you know what I love about this product? How it's able to blah, 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 blah. Well, good. So we love it. What makes us think the other person does? That's why we need to ask questions. Okay. Mm-hmm. So everyone seeks happiness, and happiness is relative. Now, number three, which kind of ties it together, is resources are limited. Now, that's not to be confused with a lack kind of mentality. Not at all. We live in a very abundant universe. But in terms of certain things, we all have a limited amount of time in a day, right? Mm-hmm. Or our lives, or a week, or a year, time. We have a limited amount of money. We have a limited amount of energy. We have a limited amount of knowledge. We have a limited amount of many things. What this means then is that everyone, including us, we're continually making choices throughout the day. Some of these choices are conscious. Many of them are unconscious. But every single choice that any human being makes is always based on whether they believe that doing this certain thing will bring them closer to happiness based on how they understand happiness on an individual level and within the limited amount of choices they believe they have. So if we understand that, we never have to be disappointed by another human being again, because we understand and respect the fact that the decision they made isn't personal against us. It's about their sense of happiness.
That's really profound. I think because there's so often an element of taking things personally. And mm-hmm. if you can, you know, step out of your own head, for lack of a better phrase, and step out of your own head and maybe not even get into someone else's head, but at least recognize that there is someone else's head.
Exactly.
And it's not yours. That can really go a long way in terms of allowing you to communicate better. You know, there's one other thing that you talk about that just fascinates me, because I think one of the things that we hear so much about is the concept of compromise. And you say that that's not always the right way to go. That's not always a win. And I think that we're always taught, well, try to find the middle ground, you know, where it's a compromise between the two. How does that fit in?
So, you know, and of course, there's a time and place for compromise and living a life of civility and living with others. There's times, of course, we have to. But we would say that compromise is not the first option we would want someone to take, okay? Compromise, and in the story in The Go-Giver Influencer, one of the mentors tells their protege that the word compromise comes from the Latin for nobody actually gets what they want, right? And no one feels good about it, because by the very nature of compromise, both sides are giving up something they want in order to go along, move it forward. Again, sometimes it's necessary, but we don't want it to be the fallback position. What we would rather people do rather than compromise is look to collaborate. Because collaboration by its very nature is win-win. It's 1 + 1 = 3. It's finding out how both of you can get more of what you want without taking away from the other person. Okay. So is there a time and place to compromise? Sure there is, but that's not the first option we want someone to take.
I love that. Yeah. I think that that's a, you know, we don't think about, we always come, we've come at compromise with this idea that everybody wins, but I think you're exactly right. There's always a bit of a loss where a compromise.
Compromise by its very nature is a loss. If it's a win for everyone, you collaborated. You didn't compromise. There's an old story, and you've probably heard this one, but of the two children who, the brother and sister, who each wanted, there was one orange and they both wanted it, and they fought over it. And finally the mom or dad said, well, compromise, just split it down the middle. You can each have half. Well, it would seem to make sense. Except for later on, when discussing the issue, what they came to find out was that one of the children wanted the orange to eat and enjoy. The other one wanted the rind for a school project that they were doing. Okay. Wow. Had they asked the right questions, they would have found they could have both had an entire orange instead of each getting only half of what they really wanted.
Wow. I love that. Wow.
I love that too.
Perfect analogy.
Thank you. I didn't make that one up.
That's okay. We'll tell everybody you did, Bob.
It was anonymous, you know.
Anonymous. Mr. Anonymous. When you hear compromise, you think, I mean, I'm listening to what you're saying, and I'm looking at this in a personal way and a professional way. Everything. When you compromise, you think, oh, well, I'm just going to acquiesce, and I don't like tension, or I don't like conflict, and I try to avoid it. So I'm not going to stir the pot. I'm just going to give in. And that's such a loss. So there's your personal component. And then I see it in business. Well, yeah, we're going to compromise on the specs of this project, or we're going to compromise on price. And again, it's a loss. Mm-hmm. What opportunities are you missing by doing that?
Exactly. Exactly. And usually the other person's missing opportunities as well. So mm-hmm. it's, yeah. And again, there are times and places for practically everything, but usually there's an option for collaboration that we don't often see. And the reason, again, is because we tend to see the other person and their wants, or what would bring them happiness, through our own eyes, through our own set of beliefs.
Oh, because we could project all day long, right, Bob? Our feelings,
and
sure.
And mm-hmm. as human beings, that's what we do, because, you know, we tend to believe that other people see the world the same way we do, which intuitively would make sense. What else do we know? You know, right. And so that's why we've got to understand what I call the clash of belief systems. And it's not that you have to understand that other person's belief systems. The fact is, they probably don't even understand their belief system. They don't think that deeply about it. We just need to know that the two belief systems, or what would bring each of us happiness, are probably different. And it's our job, the onus is on us, mm-hmm. to ask the right questions and then listen and be able to determine what's going to be the best answer for everyone.
And then you add, without judgment.
Of course. And that's, right? You know, when we can do that, that's nine steps ahead of the game. Right.
Because it's okay that we're different. It's okay. It's not always going to be right or wrong. Okay. I'm going to take this in a different direction here a little bit. In some of my research I was doing, that you are a quote unquote, not an app. Wait a minute. I can't even say it. You don't have apology.
Unapologetic.
Unapologetic. I couldn't get the words out, everybody. Thank you for listening at home. Animal fanatic. And you're on the board of directors of Furry Friends Adoption in Clinic.
I used to be on the board. Yeah.
You used to be. Do you want to tell us more about your furry friends?
I love them. I know this isn't politically correct, but you know, I love animals more than I love people. So.
Well, they're the kings and queens of no judgment. Yeah, they just take you for what you're worth, and exactly. Talk about the quintessential go-givers. They just want you to be happy.
That's right.
They just want, right. If you're happy, they're happy. Their little tails are wagging. And so that fits in with your philosophy for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have any furry friends of your own, Bob?
I have one cat that I got from the shelter, of course. And, I live in a condominium complex, and I still travel, and I live alone and still travel too much to have a dog. So that's a little bit difficult, but, you know, do have my cat, and the neighborhood, There are others who do have dogs, and those are kind of my dogs too. I'm their Uncle Bob.
Dogs by proxy. Pets by proxy.
That's cool. Hey, I'm wondering, Bob, in all of the interviews you've done, you know, for your podcast and where you've been talking to a lot of people.
This is my favorite one. Was that the answer?
No. We're just going to tweet that whether you say it or not, so don't even worry about that. No, I'm wondering, of all these interesting people that you've talked to, who stands out in your mind? I know there's got to be a million of them, but who was just impressive to you or exciting for you to talk with that you learned a lot from?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. You know, and I have interviewed so many people and just met so many people just, you know, based on what I do, I have that opportunity to do that. So many fascinating ones. I would say this, the ones that have stood out the most are those who were these immensely successful, put together people who let me do all the talking or who let those around them do all the talking. And I would notice their intent listening. And that always impresses me. You know, there are ones that I'm just thinking of by name that they're such wonderful listeners, and they act like they're, you know, they're totally fascinated, and they probably are in the other person. I'll tell you a story though, something I heard that I thought was that this always meant a lot to me. I had a friend of mine, her name was Pam, and Pam was, she was a speaker that she hasn't really been doing this for years now, but she was really good friends with, Burt Reynolds at one point. And Burt had he just passed recently, but he, had a dinner theater down here that he had for a long time in Jupiter, Florida. And because she was friends with him, he would have her come down and work with some of the actors on some of their communication and so forth. And she said she met Ricardo Montalban in one of the plays. And she said it was the most fascinating thing because he said to her, Pam, I can't really do the accent.
I want you to do the accent. No, you have to do the accent.
Pam, I really wish I could learn to be more charismatic. And I'm thinking,
oh my God.
Ricardo Montalban.
Are you kidding?
More charismatic.
That's impossible.
There's a pro, because if there's anyone who's about the most charismatic man in the world, it would be Ricardo Montalban. And yet he was humble enough to feel he could improve in that area, which is probably why he's so charismatic, because he always would study and want the edge. And so those things really impress me with people. When I see them continuing to grow, always listening and so forth.
So Bob, that leads me to my question for you, or one of them, of course. You talk a lot about the 5 secrets of genuine influence and all of these things that you have said, including that ability to listen, which I think when you have someone who is genuinely interested in what you have to say and they're truly listening to you, it's very humbling and it's also a great emotional connection. Yeah. So after talking about that, now what would be the 5 secrets to genuine influence besides that ability to listen and grow an emotional connection?
Well, the listening part is one of them. You know, it begins with mastering one's emotions. This is where it all begins, because it's only when we're in control of our emotions, when we're in control of ourselves, that we're even in a position to be able to take a potentially negative situation or person and turn it into a win for everyone involved. We know this, we all know this, yet how often do we, based on what someone says or does, do we allow ourselves to become frustrated or helpless or victimized or angry, and we say or do that very thing that is totally counterproductive to what we're looking to accomplish? We know it. You know, why would we do something like that if we know better? Well, because we're human beings. And as human beings, we are emotional creatures. It's simply how we're built. We'd like to think we're logical. And to a certain extent, of course, we are. But we're pretty emotion driven. As human beings, we make major decisions based on emotion. And we back up those emotion-based decisions with logic. We rationalize, which basically means we tell ourselves rational lies. Okay, in order to justify
it. I love that turn of the phrase.
Yeah, so the key is not to deny our emotions, or to, you know, renounce our emotions, first of all, that would not be keeping with human nature, so it's not sustainable. But there's also no need to. Emotions are a wonderful part of life. They bring us joy. They make life worthwhile. No. Have your emotions, but make sure that you're the master of your emotions rather than your emotions being the master of you. To again, quote my dear friend and one of my great mentors, Dondi Scumaci, she says, take your emotions along for the ride, but make sure you are driving the car. So that's, you know, very important. Yeah. Now we get step number two, which is to step into the other person's shoes, which, you know, sounds kind of trite because we've all heard that saying before and it sounds kind of easy. But then you think about it, is it easy to step into another person's shoes? After all, most of us have different sized feet. So literally, we can't step into another person's shoes. Figuratively, we can't step into their heads or their minds. We're not them. We come from different beliefs, different ways of seeing the world, different paradigms, different models. So what we need to do, as we talked about earlier, is if we do want to step into their shoes, figuratively, we need to ask questions and then listen, but not listen with our ears. That's the surface listening most of us do. That's listening in order to speak. You know, we'll let them have their 2 cents so that we can get in our 10 cents. It's listening with your eyes. It's listening with your posture. It's listening, as one of the mentors advised, with the back of your neck, putting your entire self, your entire being into understanding this person from their viewpoint. And when we do this, two wonderful things happen. One is we actually do learn more about that person. We have more knowledge about them. We're more equipped to know how to help them. But number two, this person feels heard. They feel listened to. They feel understood. And it's, again, human nature. We want to feel understood. And this leads to trust. Number three is to set the frame. And this is so important, setting the frame, that when you do this correctly, you're basically 95% of the way there to obtaining the results you want. A frame is simply the foundation from which everything else occurs. And I often tell the story about being at a Dunkin' Donuts restaurant and seeing a little boy. He was about 2.5 years old, a little toddler. He was running around the store when his parents called him back over to the table. As he starts to walk over, he takes a spill on the floor. He slips and falls. He wasn't hurt, but you could tell he was certainly shocked and didn't know what to make of it. So he looked at his parents, of course. Who would he trust the most? He's looking at them for their interpretation of the event. Okay? You know, this is what happened, but what does it mean, right? What happens from here? Now, I truly believe that had the parents gotten upset and panicky and, oh, no, you know, he would have started to cry.
But absolutely.
But they just handled it so beautifully. They walked over quickly, but very calmly, and they had very serene looks in on their faces. The vibes were very serene, and they smiled, and they applauded, and they laughed, and they said, oh, that looks like so much fun. What a good trick. And immediately the little boy began to laugh. What the parents did is they set a productive frame from which he could operate. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need to do whenever we come across someone. You know, we also have to be able to reset the frame when someone comes to the situation with a negative frame. You know, I remember almost hitting a guy with my car as I was pulling into a parking space, and it was my fault. I wasn't paying attention as I should have. And he looked at me the nastiest look you could imagine. He was scared, he was angry, I mean, he was ticked. So his frame was obviously an anger frame. Now, had I bought into that, and then I said, what are you looking at? Watch where you're going. You watch where you're going, you know, what have you. No, I changed the frame immediately. I put my hand up through the windshield and with a smile of friendly apology, and I very quickly went, sorry. No problem. So we reset the frame and we turned it from something adversarial into something friendly. The funny thing is, when I got out of the car, he apologized to me for not paying attention as he was getting out his car. And that's what changing a frame can do. You make sure that you're in control of the frame. Law number four is to communicate with tact and empathy. My dad has always defined tact as the language of strength. And I've always loved that because to me, it takes strength. It takes self-control. It takes mastery to not just come back at somebody with a, you know, with a quick remark, or to hit that email in response back, or to say something insulting on social media when someone's right, but instead to think first before you speak. Tact is really communicating an idea to someone that they might ordinarily not be welcoming of, but doing it in such a way that not only are they not defensive toward you and resistant to your ideas, but they're open to you and more accepting of your ideas. Empathy is what allows us to have that tact. Law number five is the law, or number law, principle number five, excuse me, mixing up the two books. Principle number five is to let go of having to be right. Now, this is the counterintuitive sound.
That's hard.
What? Let go of having to be right?
I always am.
That's how I feel. That's how we all feel. And what happens is, you know, we're, it's not that we're not wanting to be right, or that we're not going to prepare to be right, to do everything we can to be right. It's that we're going to let go of the attachment to having to be right, which means we're going to open ourselves up to considering that we may not be 100% right, or there's something we may not know that we think we know. And when we let go of this attachment to having to be right, we're able to go into learner's mode. And that's totally opposite of the person who, you know, their mind's made up, don't confuse them with the facts. They're not open to it, and they're not able to grow. And they can never know anything more than what they already know. And typically people like that don't even know what they think they know, okay? And so when we can operate like this, and when we can consider someone else's point of view, that doesn't mean we have to agree with it. It means we're gonna open up our minds to understand why they're thinking the way they're thinking. And do they have a point, or to what degree do they have a point? We need to let go of our ego. We need to be humble. We need to know. You know, we're human beings, we may not, but what happens is when we go into this kind of learning mode, the chances are much more likely we're going to be right. But even more importantly, this person we're dealing with is going to quickly understand that we're not someone who's looking to be right at their expense. And because of that, they will actually be much more open to and less defensive of our ideas.
That's amazing. This has been a fascinating conversation from start to finish. Thank you. So thank you so much for that.
I appreciate that.
And we will be in Jupiter, Florida as soon as we possibly can, just so that we can
continue. We've got Dunkin' Donuts coffee waiting for you.
Look, it's Uncle Bob, Charlie.
Oh. Hi, Charlie. Hey, buddy.
Who's the buddy?
For our listeners, there's a dog over at Kathy's house. People listening going, what is happening right now?
My little Calvin sends paw bumps to Charlie.
Paw bumps.
Yeah, you must just have a voice, and he just came in, and the tail was going. It's like, it's Uncle Bob, Mom. It's Uncle Bob.
That's fantastic.
Well, Bob, we can't thank you enough for giving us your time today and all of your wisdom. We're so very happy. If there's anything that you'd like our listeners to know about you that we didn't cover.
I think you all covered it pretty darn well. Thank you.
Okay.
people can find you where?
Where we can find you. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, they can go to thegogiver.com without the hyphen, just thegogiver.com. And while they're there, they can check out all the various resources on the site, including where they can get chapters of the book to read first to see if they like where it's headed. Then they can always click through if they like.
Okay, great. Well, hear that, everyone. Please run or walk. Run. Don't walk.
Click.
Charlie.
Click.
Click. Download. Please, when you listen to this episode, there are so many tweetables out there. I'm going to have to look up that first person, Bob. I don't know.
Well, I just actually
last name for us
in the message space.
He put it in the chat.
Yeah, yes. I actually put it in the chat for you.
Thank you. Okay, because we definitely have to look up
Dondi Scumaci. Yeah, she's magnificent. What an amazing leader and human being.
It sounds it. So thank you for sharing her with us, and thank you again so much. And this is Kathy from Four Chicks Chatting, and please write us a review today. I'm sure you're going to love this episode, so we'd love to hear what your thoughts are, and you can follow us on that social thing, and we will see you next time.
Thanks for listening to our chicks. Want to learn how to create your own chick chat? Head to our website, chickschatting.com. Be sure to join our chats on that social thing, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.